It's the 28th of December, 2024. I'm very glad to be a part of this thing, this Dhamma life. And so this reflection was coming up a bit for me today that I'm just very grateful for the opportunity to be able to give up this lifetime for the sake of working in some small way for the Buddhasasana. So, and even though perhaps I haven't done that in the best way possible, or there's been mistakes and foibles, but it's all a learning process. And over time, learning has taken place. So it's I'm very glad to be a part of this and to continue to be a part of this. And also, one thing that's really amazing, I think, is just sometimes when we first come to this, we maybe don't realize what we're a part of, that when we practice, when we keep precepts and cultivate our mind, when we bhavana, which is the cultivation. So we might think, well, you know, what kind of difference could I make one person? But as a group, what we're a part of, then what we do does make a difference. When we keep sila, when we practice with sila, samadhi, punya, then we start to have a say in the state of the world as a whole. And our actions can become quite powerful. And when we hold sila for a long time, when we hold precepts for a long time, then we actually have a part to play in the state of the world, in making the world a better place. And we don't really have to doubt that or worry that we're not doing enough. We're doing probably more than we realize. When we hold precepts and we're firm in them and we hold them for a long time, then we're making perhaps more of a difference than we realize. And this is important to do. This is recollecting our own goodness, not in a way that we're becoming puffed up and vain, but in a way that helps us encourage ourselves. We can encourage ourselves to keep moving forward, encourage ourselves to not give up. Sometimes people ask, well, what kind of qualities do you have to have to, if you've become an ordained person, what kind of qualities do you have to stay ordained in the long term? And I would just say, just don't give up, just not giving up. And in order to do that, we do have to recognize the fleeting nature of this life, how time just keeps passing relentlessly. The days and nights are just relentlessly passing. Another new year coming along, another year, then it'll be another new year if we live long enough, and another, eventually we'll meet death, and that's going to happen to all of us. So when we recognize the fleeting nature of this existence, then we'll do what we can. It'll make it easier to not give up. We'll be more resolved to be able to relinquish the kind of banal sense pleasures that we have been pursuing. So make it easier to do something truly worthwhile and weighty and meaningful in the world. Because if we're just focused on ourselves and getting what pleasure we can for ourselves, that's going to go in the other direction. But if we're firm on our aim and we've developed a sense of perseverance, courageousness even, in our practice, then we can be completely firm in our aim with the precepts and the meditation, the cultivation of panya, of discernment. It's very important to recollect our own goodness and to make much of it. So once we've established that, then we come back to just the day-to-day practice, anapanasati. And this is kind of a wonderful practice that we can come back to any time. And even if we're engaged or talking to people, we can still have those little drops of mindfulness and be recollecting the breath. And just to feel the breath coming in and out of the nose is enough, even for a moment. And it can be a way to center ourselves. It can be a way to stay in so the attention, the energy doesn't get too dispersed by going and grabbing onto things outside of ourselves. And when we do this on a regular basis, it doesn't just have to be during a period of retreat or during a more focused type of like a day-long meditation session. We don't necessarily have to do that, although those things can provide a very strong foundation for us. Then all we have to do is just when we feel the breath, then that is a minor establishment of mindfulness. Then we keep the mind even. And then we can use various practices to uplift the mind. Once the mind is even and neutral and in a very normal state, then we can use various reflections to encourage ourselves, inspire ourselves, recollecting the Buddha, recollecting the great meditation masters and practitioners of the past, such as Ajahn Mun and Ajahn Chah and many others. And we can, that's Buddha Nusati and Sangha Nusati, or even recollecting, say, Sakha Praindevarat, Sakha, the Lord of the Tavatinksa Devas. And that's one of the classes of Devas that we actually recollect in the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, which we chanted this evening, is that the Tavatinksa Devas rejoiced when they were one of the levels of Devas that rejoiced. They are a sense sphere Devas. So I think they're very much like humans, but in a more refined form. And they rejoiced at the exposition, at the revealing, the turning of the wheel of the Dhamma, the Dhammacakkappavattana. So that exposition on the Four Noble Truths and the Noble Eightfold Path, these devas rejoiced at it. They had a sense of wonder and awe at this. It's something they haven't realized for themselves, even in their refined state, in their state of great happiness that they experience as devatas. They still haven't realized this Four Noble Truths. So this is something that is great and unique to the Buddha's teaching. And incredibly basic, incredibly simple on the surface, the truth of suffering. There is suffering. There is suffering is a very profound statement. And the Buddha isn't saying there is your suffering or there is my suffering. Just there is suffering. Suffering is something that is pervasive. And anywhere we look, whether we look at ourselves or we look at others or we look at the world, there is suffering. So it's a very profound statement, a very true statement. It's a arya satya, it's a noble truth. It's an irrefutable truth. There is suffering. So if somebody was to come up to you and you say, I don't know about the Buddha's teachings, I don't see any suffering anywhere. There isn't suffering. What would you think about that? This person is mad. They're not making sense. There is suffering. And another profound statement is that desire is the cause of suffering. This suffering that is pervasive, there is a cause. And it can be uprooted. This cause can be uprooted. The three types of desire, that's the kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha, sense desire, and the desire for becoming, we say, or the desire to be, this desire to not be, as last May I was at Chithurst Forest Monastery in the UK with my good friend Ajahn Ahingsako, who's the abbot there, and there was two very senior disciples of Ajahn Chah who were there, Longpor Khun and Longpor Damrong, and they were there for Vesakha Puja. And so it was great to be there at that time, and they both gave talks, and Longpor Khun gave a talk, and he talked about this kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha, and he talked about it in a way that I hadn't heard before, and he linked it with these different deva realms so that the kama tanha, this is the what we call, he actually linked it with the three, what we call the three worlds, which in English Dhamma talks, we don't seem to hear about it so much, but in the Thai, it's talked about a lot, and Thanajan Mun would talk about this, that we have the kama loka, the rupa loka, and the arupa loka. These are known as the three worlds that make up all of samsara. And every being in existence falls in one of those three worlds. The Kama Loka is the sense sphere world. That's us and the lower sense sphere devas. So the sense sphere devas go up from the Bhuma devas up through the Paranimita Vasavati devas, are known as the highest sense sphere devas. And then there's the Brahma Lokas, the Brahma worlds. And the lower Brahma worlds are form worlds, are called the Rupa Loka. And then the highest Brahma worlds are the Arupa Loka, where they're composed only of mind. They don't have any form, but there are still beings that are so refined. They're in the Arupa Loka. So the Buddha's two original teachers, for example, were born in the Arupa Lokas, in two of the different Arupa Lokas. Alara Kalama would have been born in the realm of infinite space or the realm of nothingness, one of those, the Akinchana Loka. Then there's the Uttakaramaputta, who would have been reborn in the neither perception nor non-perception world of the formless Brahmas. So there's the what we know, and probably what comprises the most of samsara, most of existence, is the Kama Loka, the sense sphere world. This goes from the lowest hell realms up through the highest sense sphere devas. These are all considered the Kama Loka. So Lumbar Kuhn in his Dhamma talk actually linking Kama Tanha with the Kama Loka. So Kama Tanha is the cause for taking birth in the Kama Loka. That is, sense desire is the cause for taking birth in the sense sphere, in any sense sphere existence. And then there's Bhava Tanha, which acts as the cause for the Rupa Loka, so it can be very wholesome. So Bhavana, bringing into being, cultivation. Bhava Tanha is linked with the Rupa Loka, and then Vibhava Tanha is linked with the Arupa Loka. So I hadn't heard it talked about like that before, but it seemed like he knew what he was talking about. So the Buddha's covering all the bases with that statement. If those types of craving cover all of the three worlds of existence, it's possible in samsara, then he's making an ultimate statement about the cause of suffering. Then there is the third noble truth, which is the Nirodha, that this cessation can come about through the complete abandonment and relinquishment of those very cravings. And then that cessation is to be noticed, to be realized, to be actualized. And then, of course, the fourth noble truth, the path leading to all of this. The path is all important. Path is what we can focus on. The path is something concrete. This is what kind of views we should be holding. This is how we should be thinking. This is the kind of speech we should be engaging in and not engaging in. This is the kind of actions we should be engaging in and not engaging in. So it's something concrete. This is the kind of effort we need to be putting into the mind. This is the kind of mindfulness we want to be cultivating. And this is the kind of meditation we want to be doing. So the path is lined out as clearly as possible. It still takes study and reflection to come to an understanding of it. We need to be refining our understanding of this path, and the Buddha said making an effort to understand all four of these noble truths, making an exertion, making an effort. The Buddha going even so far as to say that, using the analogy of the 300 spears, which is a very, very extreme analogy as to the desirable nature of realizing the four noble truths. So, of course, the analogy, and some of you may know this already, but say if someone was to be pierced by 100 spears in the morning, 100 spears in the afternoon, and 100 spears in the evening, and somehow by some miracle not die from that, and would that person experience extreme pain and suffering? And the Buddha, talking to his monks say, yes, he would experience very extreme pain and suffering. And the Buddha says, so imagine if that type of extreme pain and suffering was experienced every day for 100 years, and somebody was to tell you, you're going to experience that for 100 years, but based on experiencing that, at the end of that 100 years, you get to realize the Four Noble Truths. And the Buddha says, should that person take them up on it? And yes, he should. it would be worth it. It would be worth it if by agreeing to that much pain and suffering, if by that extreme experience of feeling you were to realize the Four Noble Truths, you should do it. But that's not necessary. Being pierced with 300 spears every day for 100 years is not necessary. That type of pain and agony is not necessary for realizing the Four Noble Truths. But we do need to put forth some effort. We do need to put forth the requisite effort in order to get the mind to see these things. And the Dhamma is so apparent, it's always right in front of us. But the mind is hardwired to look away from it. It's like I'll always remember the first time going to see Chokinima Rinpoche when I was a Anagarika, when Lompo Pisano took the community to go see him, and that he gave a teaching that I held with me since then, which was the reason we don't see the Dhamma isn't because it's too complex or we haven't done enough learning. The reason we don't see the Dhamma is because it's too close. It's too what we are. It's too apparent here and now. It's too vividly clear. We're always looking beyond it. We're always looking past it. Or I could even quote the monk Ajahn Bunkau, visited here in 2003. He was the first resident of the fallen pine kuti after it was built. And he said, we are the living Dhamma. That's one of the reasons we don't see it. We think the Dhamma is something we realize outside of ourselves. But actually, we are the living Dhamma. The Dhamma is the truth of impermanence, and impermanence and anicchang, anicca, dukkha, anatta is what we are. That is what makes up our being. That is the body and mind. That's what we need to see. So the Four Noble Truths is used in order to reflect on our own experience. It's not something that we can read about and then take a multiple choice examination and get a little star and go on our way. And that might provide a little bit of happiness for a little while, a little bit of charge to the mind, but it's going to pass away fairly quickly. But it's an ultimate teaching for reflecting on our own experience, and it's never not relevant. It never grows old. It's timeless. It's always, the Dhamma will always be apparent here and now, whether we see it or not. Craving will always be the cause of suffering, whether we realize it or not. The path will always be a path that whoever practices it leads to liberation, whether there's currently people practicing it or not. So it's been a long day. Let's all continue to make an effort at this, and I'll leave it at that for this evening.